From the Anti-Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Anti-Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
Hey, it's August 6th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a clumsy Scott Long.
I heard that noise in there. I think I may edit that out. I don't know. But now that you've talked about it, I don't know if I can.
Well, I mean, because you cry like a little baby anytime my phone vibrates, and then I realize that I'd even have it on vibrate, so I can only imagine the reaction.
Yeah,
you.
So instead we heard your, what, wine bottles, beer bottles?
It was a water bottle and a wine bottle, though I'm sure it would accommodate wine if I'd like it to. I just have it, but yeah.
You know, funny stuff like this sometimes we'll take out and then put it at the end, like an Easter egg kind of thing, you know? But, you know, sometimes I wish I could do that with the Skype messages we send to each other. But there's no way to cut and paste. Scott has to tinkle, and then he can do the show on the end of the show. So,
no, yeah, you can't really, yeah, unfortunately. But
some of the things Scott says to me in the messages, you know, we should have printed those out and sold them. Hey, can we do those as NFTs? Is that possible?
This could be our NFTs, yes, absolutely.
They'd pay big bucks for some of the stuff you said to me over the past 15 years, I'm telling you.
All right, well, with the COVID Delta variant raging, especially here in Florida, Best Bet Jacksonville postponed next week's World Poker Tour Series and is requiring all employees to be vaccinated going forward. Also, new mask mandates for Las Vegas casinos are spurring some questions about what next month's World Series of Poker might look like. Pro Matt Glantz tweeted his odds, 4-1 that masks will remain required, 9-1 that proof of vaccination will be required, and 6-1 that 20% or more of the events will be canceled or postponed.
How do you do that? How do you set odds like that? That is so, I mean, it's one thing to be a bookie and, you know, you can sort of assess how many people are injured, whose stats are what now that they're replacing the injured football, you know, player. But how do you put 9-1 that they're going to have proof of vaccination be required? That's crazy.
Well, yeah, it's because he's not a sports bookie. So, I mean, these numbers don't mean anything.
Right. He's just writing something that just Brandon likes
drawing out of the, dragging out of the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so, yeah, no soapbox this week. We did that last week. But this is just kind of what was kind of buried in my little rant last week was that just the reality of the situation, take politics, take the shaming thing, you should get vaccine, I don't want to get vaccine, all that kind of stuff out of it. The reality is that businesses are going to step in and do what they feel that they need to do. Either for the health of their guests or employees, or really just the bottom financial line, right?
Yeah.
There might be some business out there that think this is all stupid and ridiculous, but at the same time, they know they're losing money. So they're going to do what they need to do, and that's going to be that means less poker or poker that's not the way we want to see it. So I'm hoping that we can get this under control so this doesn't happen and that all of Matt's very well-thought-out odds don't come true, but we'll see. We got another month and a half here before, figure that out. And so, I mean, of his three though, I do think masks will remain required going in there. I don't see that being lifted in the next 2 months. Hope I'm wrong. So that 4-1 is probably pretty good odds. The proof of vaccination is really interesting, I think, right now because as I mentioned there, Best Bet is mandating employees be vaccinated going forward, and they have until sometime in October, I believe, to get their second shot or first shot if they're doing the J&J.
Right.
But we're not seeing a lot of businesses yet mandating vaccinations for patrons. There are a couple I've seen. But not a lot yet. Now, that might be a wave that's coming, a big tsunami wave that's coming over the next week or two. And that might change things. But 9-1 might be a little generous on that. But I don't know. I don't know.
It's tough because you have – it's a struggle right now to even keep your business afloat while letting everyone in. Now you've got to narrow it down even more. You know, to keep your business afloat and keep everyone healthy or whatever you're trying to do with that. And you're limiting the amount of patrons you can have at your restaurant or your casino, or and that's not easy.
Well, I think the other, there's a couple difficult points that I've been talking to friends about the requirement for vaccination for patrons. I mean, one, we've already seen these poor workers just get brutalized over the last year or so, just forcing rules that maybe they don't even believe in, but it's mandatory and getting into arguments. So, I mean, now you're just throwing another gas-filled bomb onto the raging bonfire here by, making them check proof of vaccination to get in. So there are some reasons that even a business that would want to do that, I think, probably should think twice about it. So, and then the other thing, again, remember the high percentage of World Series of Poker players that are foreign, or that don't live in the United States. So, I mean, partly some of those might not even be able to make it here because of restrictions, right? So you got that problem. But if they do, I mean, I don't know the answer to this, but I'm sure not everybody, every country's vaccination cards look the same, right? So, I mean, now you're training staff to know 50 different vaccination cards, right? I don't think I honestly don't think it's doable in an event like that. I could be wrong. I mean, I don't know those questions, but those are questions in my mind that make me think that probably wouldn't happen. So I think those numbers, if I was Matt, would have been drastically higher.
Have you I know you've seen this at like a website. You saw this sort of story with the back glance thing, but you haven't been following it on like Twitter or anything, right?
Yeah, no, I haven't. Yeah, so I don't know what the discussion has been.
Yeah, I just wondered if people were like taking him up on his odds and trying to bet with him, because
Well, I
there are
mean,
plenty of bets
it's
I'd make.
probably going to be happening, yes.
Yeah. I think I would take some of these bets.
I mean, as morbid as it was, poker pros were betting on the number of deaths during COVID, right?
Wow,
So they'll bet on anything, right? So on this. And 6-1, the 20% or more events will be canceled or postponed. It's an interesting one. It's the 20% that's got me a little unsure about this. Because I think there's a very reasonable chance that there will be at least one event canceled or postponed. I just, there's yet another wave. I mean, a series is going on for 6 weeks, I think, or something like that. So, I mean, we're on Delta right now. When Elephant shows up, who knows what that's going to look like and when that's going to be, or if they even call it Elephant. That's what I would call it. But so, I mean, things could be better by the beginning of the series, and then all of a sudden, halfway through it, there's another wave that causes some problems. So 6-1's probably a decent number on that. I just don't know if it's 20% or 10% or what percent that would make me comfortable at 6-1,
Right.
but
Well, we'll see. I yeah. Well, I'm no soapbox. We're just moving on.
yep, just the facts. They're facts and Mac Lance's opinions. All right, Mason Malamuth, who created the wildly popular 2+2 form 24 years ago, has announced that he has sold it to the owners of the Hand to Note HUD. The new owners say they do not plan to make significant changes to the form, but will over the next couple of years be launching a new AI-powered forum.
And we did contact Hand to Note to buy our company, right? They were in the running, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Could have used those guys.
So this is I mean, good one, good for Mason. Can't wait for us to be somebody else saying good for you guys, but it'll happen. But I mean this is really, really cool. I mean, this is 24 years. I mean, we've been doing this for 15 years, right? So much bigger head start on us. And it really is the go-to forum. There's been lots of other people who try to create forums, but really 2+2 is the king out there. So I haven't been checking it for a long time just because it was just too much for me and too angry for me. But you can't deny that it is a place that people get most of their information about the poker world, and the obviously biggest place to go and have your opinions heard.
Yeah, nope, it's a big deal, and it's pretty complete too. It takes forever to even get from the top to the bottom of the menu of all of the different forums and threads that are on there. So It's obviously the king of all poker forums, and congratulations to him. That's great news for him.
Yeah, and I think people will probably be happy to hear that they're not going to do seismic changes to the forum. At least regular users. I mean, some of those that like me, like I get frustrated and lost there. So maybe I would be in favor of something different. I don't know what that would be,
Right.
but I'm and maybe it's this AI powered forum. I have no idea what that is, but I'd be interested to see that when it comes out. And if there's a cleaner way to present that information, easier to find stuff, that's what I'd be in favor of. But nice to hear that for their hardcore regulars that there shouldn't be much changes initially.
Is it was it just me to be shocked when you found out that there was actually a forum 24 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, right?
And that's probably part of the reason that it looks the way it does, because that's what forums looked like back then,
Yeah.
right? We used to have the Ante Up forum for a while, right? And it's a popular look back then, but it's confusing. So, but
Yeah, I mean, when you think about poker's boom when it started in 03, 04, that kind of thing, I mean, that's still only 18, 17 years ago. So 7 years or 8 years before that, or 6 years, whatever, I mean, that's when they started a forum about poker and they had enough people to keep the forum going back then, when people didn't even know about what was going on, but didn't even know what Hold'em was, really. Unless you were just a hardcore player who played at your kitchen table with your grandparents in Texas, you know?
Yep.
So it's crazy they've been around that long. So congrats to them and good luck to the new owners handing out.
All right, a North Florida man is facing multiple felony charges after sheriff's deputies say players in a home game said he got angry over going broke and pulled a gun, Chris, and stole their money. Two players who claim losses of $740 and $300 are pressing charges, while a fourth player who said he lost 1,875 Skittles said he'll pursue the cash civilly.
Oh man. See, this is why I don't play in the home games anymore.
I mean, this is one effective way of resolving your losses, I guess. Right?
Exactly.
Oh man! So all right, so we've given a lot of home game advice over the years, I think, Chris. Right?
Yeah.
I can't recall part of our advice being pat your players down.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But maybe that should be part of the list now. I mean, let me just scratch that in right now. Pat down players. Yes. Okay.
Bring snacks, no guns. Right? What the hell?
Bring the cannoli, leave the gun.
Leave the gun. Exactly. Exactly.
All right, so I mean, we're laughing about it, but I mean, this is some serious stuff. I mean, it's like felony robbery with a firearm, and some felony theft, and yeah, I don't think this guy's next game is going to be playing for cigarettes with the guards somewhere.
And warm.
Yeah, right? So.
I can't, I'm not surprised at all. It's North Florida, I'll tell you that.
Yep, I used to live up there, so yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would never go to a home game in that
No, I don't think so.
area. Well, man, I hope those people get their money back, and this guy goes away for a long time and
Yeah.
thinks about what
Unbelievable.
he did, because
I mean,
that's scary stuff.
and conceivably, this is a person that you're friends with, you
Yeah.
know? I mean, really, I mean, it's not like it's just, you know, imagine like just, you know, Fasso pulling out a Beretta because I sucked out on him on the river and saying, "You didn't win the pot, I won the pot." It's like out of the movies.
Yeah, I know. I think Fast is more of a Glock guy, but that's all right.
He's sophisticated. A Glock is not sophisticated at all. I can't imagine the cineast pulling out a German gun or an Austrian gun or whatever. There's no way. That guy's got a Beretta. You know?
But no, so here's the thing that about the knowing people. I'm wondering now, because everybody goes to home games where they don't know everybody there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know the host, and so the host invites you, or you're in the game and you ask the host, "Hey, I got a buddy who wants to play. He's a good guy. I vouch for him," right? So it seems to me, and I'm just jumping to conclusions here. But the guy who lost the most money doesn't want to press charges. The other two guys do want to press charges. So is it possible that this guy was only friends with the guy who's not pressing charges against him, and the other two don't know him and are like, "Yeah, give me my money back."
Yeah, that's a good thought. I hadn't really. I did wonder why the hell this guy is pursuing it civilly. Maybe he just means in civil court. I don't know, but
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
that's what he means, right?
Like,
To go to
not
court.
friendly, not please and thank you. Can I have my money back,
Okay, yeah.
please?
So,
So.
But yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't, I you know, if you pulled a gun on me, Scott, I'd get my money from you any way possible. Civil court be damned, you know, and that's a lot of money too. Like, that's a lot.
Well, and the other home game tip to come out of this, folks, is don't play forehanded. Tempers just rage when you're playing forehanded.
Or
Game's done forehanded. Everybody go home, try again next week, right?
Or the other guys that were in the game didn't have any money.
Well, that could be it.
Or he liked those people. Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, forehanded home games don't work.
Yeah, the other kind of a nitpick on the journalist here that throughout this article they mentioned stole money from the pot. And I'm like, I'm sure they're. This wasn't all the money in the pot at the here, and the guy didn't take everything else. I think he just took all the money, right?
Right.
So I don't know, but interesting story and a scary story. So
now that I think about it, when we first started playing together, though, we played four-handed all the time.
It was
me, you, Faso, and Kyle only, and we'd play for hours, and we'd have to play your games first. Then we'd get to my games when I didn't have enough money. And, you know, because we play for an hour at each discipline instead of just dealer's choice. And then when we played dealer's choice, then everybody started, you know, winning regularly rather than just one guy winning because we all played his game first. But it was just the four of us, right? There was no one else. There was no fifth very rarely.
Wow, yeah. I guess you might be right. I don't remember.
Every once in a while, we'd have Pat Booth join us for a little while, and then he'd leave. But other than that, it was just the four of us. So we were pretty stupid back then.
But none of us pulled a gun on each other. So.
No, that's right. No. Wisdom prevailed. Hey, any updates? The Ante Up World Championship will be at Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California, August 13th to the 29th, with satellites beginning this week. There will be events, 17 events over 17 days with $1 million in guaranteed prize money, including the $1,650 main event, August 27th to the 29th, with a $500,000 guarantee. For the schedule and structures, visit ThundervalleyCasinoResort.com and click on the Poker tab. Papes, the Ante Up fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month, and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Ante Up Fans Group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask Call the Floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Ante Up logo designs on merchandise at anteupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Ante Up Magazine, Ante Up Pokercast, or Ante Up Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or post in the Ante Up fans group on Facebook. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. We'll have Rivers Casino Schenectady Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This is Nick Smith. He says, I run a regular home game and a friend and I got involved in a PLO hand where we both have the nuts, Broadway. The dealer finishes the deal as we chop the pot up. The dealers are the cards are all collected, turned face down, and being gathered for the next dealer, when my friend says, I had A7 and the river was another ace. I made a full house. I said, I really don't know. I wasn't paying attention. No other player confirmed he had a full house, but one player did say there was a 7 on the board. It being my home game and him being a friend, I slid all my chips to him, around $175, without protest. I trust him, and I do think he honestly believes he filled up on the river. But I'm questioning the decision because nobody else confirmed the full house, only the 7 on the board. If I wasn't involved in the hand, I believe I would have made a decision to chop the pot between the two players because I think that's the most friendly thing to do. I would love to hear your opinion on this.
All right, so we're letting Elliot to unpack one more rig here, because we can handle this one. And we both responded, and very differently. So I'm going to let you you respond first here.
Okay, well, I guess it depends on the type of home game you're in. If you're playing a PLO game, you're probably playing in a game where you guys are taking it seriously enough that you follow the rules. And the rules here are those cards were collected, turned face down, mucked, and you both agreed you had Broadway. So to me, I'd be like, look, I know it's my home game. I know you're my bud. And I know you think you had a full house. And you may have had a full house, but I didn't pay attention. And no one here can confirm it. And your cards are in the muck. We're serious poker players. If we were in a casino, there's not a chance that they would say, oh, just give him it because he thinks he had a full house. We both declared our hands and you didn't let your card speak. So we have to split this pot. I'm really sorry. And that's what I would say to him. I would never give the money back if that's the way it was. If you can prove it, there's a way to prove that you had the boat, then yes, you split the money. But then you give him the money. But in this case, you both mucked your hands, you both declared Broadway, and the deal was already getting shuffled and ready to go on to the next hand. So I just can't give him my money at that point. That's just not right.
All right, absolutely agree in a technical sense, and really maybe even not a technical sense. But the one thing I mentioned though is that it's different in a home game because you're trying to keep it friendly. You don't want a game to break apart because of an angry argument or anything like that. So there are some other considerations I think that need to be taken into account here. Now, with the information we have, it's really hard for me to just give that money back, I think. So that's where I'm on Team Chris with this. It's like, the cards aren't there. No one else saw it. So, I think you need a little bit more than that. But the larger point, and we've said this before, is these situations, what you need to worry about more is going forward, what you're going to do. Because home games need to have some kind of rules to them to avoid this kind of stuff, because you don't have an impartial party like you do at a casino. You don't have
Right.
eyes to the skies that can look at them. And if you do, that's a fantastic home game. Invite me. That's awesome. And so you can't call a floor and have somebody come over and give an impartial decision. So you got to decide on your own. And usually it seems like most of these times it comes down to the host, and it always seems like the host is involved in the hand too. So
Yeah.
I think it's just a discussion to have going forward. I think probably how I would have personally handled this, I would say, hey, you're a good friend. I trust you. I didn't see it. If you say you had a full house, you did. Here's the money. But going forward, what's our rule on this, right? How are we going to handle this in the future? Because we don't want to keep making these decisions based on gut at that time, right? So, and I think an easy one here would be say, hey, just like in a casino, once the cards are mucked, that's it. So, I feel bad if you realize what your hand was after that, but that wouldn't get you the money at the casino, and it's not going to get you the money here. And
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too is the human mind is flawed, and
yes.
our memories are 100% flawed. And I mentioned this a few times on the show just recently too, but I'll mention it again. I'm driving home from the Silks, and I call the casino in the card room and say, "Wait a minute, I think I made a straight on the end."
Yeah.
It's like I'm already in my car driving home, but my memory is thinking that maybe I made a straight, and no. Sorry, I mean that's the way it goes. It's one thing to be like, hey, and it's like for $10 or something, but this is a pretty big pot, and you're responsible for your cards, and that should be known going into home games. Yeah, you're responsible for your actions and your cards, and in this case, I mean that's a big pot. You could have said, hey, look, you know what? I'm sorry, but you did make a mistake, or maybe you didn't. We don't know, but at this time. Really, there's no way to recreate this. Do I really have to lose this pot because I'm counting on your memory? I'm not saying you're an angle shooter, but seriously, I mean, now every time you move forward, now you're gullible. I'm gonna be like, hey, guess what? Oh, wait, and then do it again to you, especially in PLO. So yeah, I think Scott's right. Moving forward, there has to be some solid rules in place so that this kind of stuff doesn't happen again. And you can lose friendships over stuff like this. So, but in that case, I mean, I don't know, $175. I'm willing to lose a friend.
That's the price for Chris Kassenz's
That's
friendship.
right, 175. There you go.
$75.
Everybody has their price.
But yeah, I mean, you're right about the mind being flawed. I mean, think about how many times you misread your own hand when the cards are there, right?
Yes,
How
exactly.
many times you have to like have everybody in the game like pull the three cards down in Omaha from the board so you can see what your low is, right? So yeah, I mean, again, that yeah, you're not. It's not angle shooting. It's just you may have thought you saw something that you didn't, and that's a really difficult way to run a game, I think. So,
I agree.
but generally speaking, In your home games, as much as you can enforce casino rules, I think the better. And we said this before, one of the reasons that you should do that is because if your players are going to go to casinos, you want them to be able to play and not get in trouble and not do things that get other people angry with them, right? So if you treat your home game like a training ground, then your overall poker experience is going to be better.
Yeah,
So,
very good. We get to complete an O'Malley's move today, a special O'Malley's move. So we're going to listen to part one to refresh our memories, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a 50-cent, $1, no-limit hold'em home game. This is a pretty good game. Most of the players know a bit about the game, and it plays fairly straightforward. The buy-in is 200, and most players buy in for the max. The game is seven-handed. We started the hand with 250, up 50. The blinds post, the under-the-gun makes a standard raise to 250. This player is tight and aggressive. From under the gun, even in a shorthanded game, we can expect him to be playing premium cards here. Nines are better pairs, ace-king, ace-queen, somewhere in that range. He sits with 275. It's folded to us on the button, and we look down at the jack of hearts, jack of clubs. We could raise here, both for value and for range definition, but if this player has any of those premium holdings, we might get blown off of this hand without seeing a flop. I like a call here. We might be good, and if we hit a jack and he's got something like aces or kings, we will most likely get his stack. We call. The blinds fold. The pot is 650, and the flop is exactly what we wanted. The queen of clubs, jack of diamonds, seven of clubs comes down. The under-the-gun insta-checks. The insta-check is interesting. If this were something like ace-king of clubs, I think he'd bet here. I also think he would have bet with aces or kings or even ace-queen. Unless he had made up his mind to check any flop to see what we are going to do. I like a bet here. If he does in fact have aces or kings, we might get the money in right now. I'm not overly worried about the clubs, so I'm going for value here. We make it 350 to go. Our opponent quickly calls. There's 1350 in the pot, and the turn is the tray of hearts. This time our opponent leads into us. He makes it $10 to go. Well, this is interesting. Are the aces finally coming alive? If so, now is our moment. We make it $30 to go. Our opponent stops for a moment, checks his cards, asks us what we have behind, and then slowly counts out 100. So, what's the move?
Wow, really tough spot to be in here. We have a huge hand, but there's one hand that has us beat, and sadly, it is an extremely likely holding. The only thing that makes me feel better about the situation is that our opponent is described as tight aggressive. The quote-unquote tight part speaks to queens, but the quote-unquote aggressive part could speak to a couple other hands that we have beat. But the real problem here is we still have a river to come, and it's hard to imagine that we won't face an all-in bet there. I know it's hard to fold a set, but are you willing to go broke here?
Yeah, we do. We have a huge hand, but I got a feeling, just like you said, it feels a lot like set over set. I'm not sure I can fold, but I really want to. So let's fold and have the haters hate. Here comes part two.
Hello again. If this were hand of the week, this would be a clear and very obvious fold. But in this situation with the second nuts, it is definitely not as easy. This really, really feels like aces or kings, thinking they're getting a ton of value from ace-queen or a flush draw. I think there's one move here. We shove. Our opponent snap calls. Not good. Then tables the queen of spades, queen of diamonds. Even worse. We get no help on the river and have to rebuy. So, was there any chance we can get away from this hand? Or are we just destined to lose our stack here? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, it's been great doing this segment for Ante Up for 10 years, and I'll continue to keep these up as long as you let me. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, the shove was one way to avoid that heavy river bet, so interesting solution there, O'Malley. But seriously, tough spot for any player. So, I mean, it's hard to beat yourself up when you, call with the set.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, it's the very definition of bittersweet. Set over set loss during your milestone episode. Man, sorry, O'Malley, but you know what, though? It's a good run. 10 years on the show so far, and, every once in a while, you got to lose. So, but tough break.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Ken Douglas is our hero this week, Chris.
Okay.
And he says, this hand is from the Venetian during my recent Vegas trip. In this hand, we were playing $3, $5, no limit hold'em. Which he says is a bit of a stretch for my normal bankroll, but the 1-3 games were incredibly boring. Oh, this is always trouble.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't know what's worse, playing in a 1-3 game that you think is boring and probably are going to be splashy, or going up in stakes to where you feel a little uncomfortable. So,
yeah, terrified.
Interesting debate to have, but I will say the one time that I played well above me was years ago. We were at the Mirage, and I played – there was a 10-20 Omaha game, which now I'd play all day long. But back then, I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy.
Yeah.
$20 bet. but it did make me buckle down, and I played better, and I didn't lose. So, you know, so I guess that's the argument for playing higher. So, all right, anyhow, he says he bought in for 900 and is sitting on a stack of squiggly 1600 towards the end of the night in middle position at an eight-handed table. Under the gun plus one opens for $25. He says, standard opens this game had been 15 to 30, so this is standard. He sits on a stack of little over $600. We've been playing a few hours, and he was a decent recreational player. He was down a few hundred on the night, and I guess it folds to us in the hijack with the ace of spades, queen of clubs.
Well, I guess it depends. This is probably a calling hand. Old school players would fold this because under the gun plus one likely has a hand that has that beat at this moment. Could have it dominated with ace king. You know, it's a trap hand in a way. So there is an argument for just letting it go, especially it's not suited. And the guy opened from very, very early in position. So I'm not saying I'm gonna. That seems pretty tight in this game, in this day and age. But there is an argument for folding this. I know Scott would fold ace queen often. I don't know about, and maybe in tournaments too. But in this case, I feel like I'm going to call and hope we hit it really hard. But I also feel like you could be trapped with this type of a hand, so be cautious with them.
Yeah, I know it sounds crazy to say fold ace queen, but here are the reasons that I'm gravitating more to this. More and more is that you got the kicker problem, right? So, yeah. I mean, this guy under gun plus one, you know, let's give him credit for a decent hand there. Aces, that was crushed. Kings have his down to one, I mean, a three outer. Queens, we have, an ace, and we don't want the queen. Or ace king, and then you've got a kicker problem. So that's what you need to be concerned about. So I wouldn't necessarily say I'm folding here, but your options are really limited on what happens on the flop now. So, I mean, you're not looking for that ace, I don't think. Now, I mean, obviously, if we determine by how action goes that he has kings, then that's fantastic. But, I mean, you're really looking for a queen. But if he has kings, then you don't want a queen, right? Yeah. So that gets really difficult. And you're right, it's not suited, which it doesn't add much to it, but does give you some outs there. It's not that. So, I mean, you just don't know what you're hoping for with this hand now, aside from a straight. Because you just don't know whether you want to hit your ace or your queen, or both. So that's when it gets cautious. So it might be too tight to fold, but just keep those thoughts in your mind if you're going to play this.
Yeah.
All right. He says, this is a decent hand, plays well against the villain's normal opening range that I had observed. Normally, I would consider a 3-bet to isolate and preserve my position, but being as the game is larger than I'm used to, I elect a call. Button also calls. He is a 20-something who has been drinking and getting involved in too many pots. He sits on squiggly 1200 and has been up and down all night, but is currently up squiggly 500. The blinds fold, and we head to the flop three-handed with $80 in the pot.
So this is very interesting because you kind of alluded to this earlier about playing in a bigger game makes you buckle down and play properly or in a way that you assume will ensure victory or at least not, you know, catastrophe. And he says here that normally this is what he would 3-bet.
Yep.
But now because the game is larger, he's not doing what made him so successful in poker at this time.
Yep,
so
yep.
It's odd that you're now, if you start changing the way you play that you're comfortable doing, you're already stacked against yourself with playing a much larger game. Now you're making it harder for yourself by not playing the way you want to play. If you're not comfortable playing the way you want to play, then the stakes are too high.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one thing to get in there, mix it up, and then learn from it, and then get better as you, you know, educate yourself on the ways of this sort of level of play. But to say that you wouldn't do what you normally do because of the stakes, that's not good. That, I mean, I'm not saying you're not going to win this hand. He probably wins the hand, or who knows. But the fact that, you know, you've changed the way you're playing, and not in a good way. You know, like Scott would say, he tightened up in Omaha and stuck to quality plays to make sure he made money in that game. Now I'm sure he's much more comfortable at it. He plays the way he always plays when he plays 10-20 now, and that's because he got used to it. But just change the way you're playing, it tells you something. It tells you that you're probably not comfortable. If you're not comfortable, you shouldn't be playing it. So anyway, just wanted to insert that.
Oh yeah, you absolutely said what I was going to say, that there's a difference between tightening up and playing quality hands and not splashing around as much, versus not making the proper moves when you have the hands that you have, right? So, and again, it's not criticism. It's just an awareness factor here to that.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, that this is kind of what happens when you go up in stakes, is that you get a little spooked and you end up not doing the things that you would otherwise do. So now, that being said, I don't know whether raising here would have been the right decision overall. Anyhow, I feel like it probably was, based on the extra information we have now. You know, it sounds like that he has the raiser has a wider range than would normally be expected. So that might give us a little bit more comfort with ace queen. And if that's the case, then I definitely do want to be isolated. I don't want anybody else in here. Now, granted, a drunk kid that can't hurt us too much might be fun to have in the hand. So,
yeah.
But you also have blinds to worry about as well, too. And, you know, we might have dodged a bullet on them folding as well, too. So that would have been a reason to raise. With the extra information now, then I definitely would have raised.
Yeah, we would have had position on the guy because we would have gotten that drunk kid to fold. Which, yeah, I like have him in the hand if he's terrible, but you still have another two cards now figured into the mix when you can narrow it down to two cards. So, yeah, and we didn't know going in that this guy had a wide range. Otherwise, I may have said raise with it. But in this case, I still like the call.
I wonder if this drunk kid is the same one that was on that Frontier flight. Did you see that?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I spent all morning watching those videos. I'm like, whoa.
Taped him in the seat.
My family's worth $2 million. Oh, man. Okay, so anyhow. All right, so here we go to the flop. Three of us, $80. Flop comes queen of hearts, 10 of clubs, 6 of clubs. The initial raiser bets $45, and it's on us.
Well, it's obviously a good hand, but it's a wet flop. So I don't think just calling is the way to go here. I think we need to get that button out of there. I think we need to, if we can, take the hand out now. It's a decent pot already. And if we make a raise now, we'll find out if this guy has kings or aces, or the same hand, ace-queen. But, you know, with it's very draw-heavy. You know, anybody playing Broadway cards, ace-king, they've got a gutter. Playing clubs, if they're playing from under the gun plus one, they could have a nut flush draw. So there is some stuff out there. You know, there are all kinds of straights. Even somebody being crazy with 9-8, you know, still has a gutter to a 7. So I like a raise here. I like a pretty big raise because we have another guy in the hand. So, you know, I mean, I would probably pop it somewhere in the range of like 150, 155, something like that, and get to the, get to the other guy, the initial raiser, and see what he's going to do. And we'll know right away. I'd rather lose 150 now and fold than my whole stack on the turn.
Yeah, I think you illustrated the two reasons we had to raise here. One, this is a good hand for us if we're not up against kings, right? So we need to find how good we really are right now, and then those draws are just going to kill us, especially with that third player in the hand. So you know, since the way we played it now, I think we got to come alive. I mean, you could make another argument that you know, maybe let this guy keep firing at you, but there's just too much danger out there. I think too many cards to come that aren't going to be friendly to your hand. So really do think you have to raise here.
Plus, we don't know if the guy has kings. You know what I mean? If you just call, this guy's just going to keep milking you for more and more money, and you're not gonna know. You know, and you know what you were saying before assumes that we're ahead, and if we're not ahead, I want to find out now. I don't want to wait later.
Yeah, if you call and let him keep betting, I mean, really, it's the poker equivalent of a scratch-off ticket, right?
Yep.
You're just hoping that, you know, once you leave the convenience store and scratch it off, you win. You know, that's, you know, you're not doing anything to affect the win. So.
Right.
All right, our hero says, this is a good flop for my hand. I have top pair, top kicker, as well as backdoor clubs and straights. I should raise at this point, but decide to play cautious and call one more street with the intention of pulling the trigger on a safe turn. I call. The button wastes no time in calling as well and remain three-handed with a pot of 215. Well, again, we got a little theme going here, don't we?
Yep.
Being more cautious than we normally would, twice now, and I don't know how this is going to end, but it's not shaping up well, I don't think. So
yeah, terrible.
All right, the turn is the four of diamonds, so our board now is queen of hearts, ten of clubs, six of clubs, four of diamonds, and now the original raiser checks.
Okay, well, I think it's, especially with that quick call by the button, whether he's drunk and young or not doesn't mean anything to me. I you know, someone's drawing, at the very least. Two people could be drawing. I don't think a guy with kings or aces is checking here. I think he's putting a hammer down. So I think we have the under the gun beat, and I don't think a guy with kings or aces on the button would have just called preflop or would not have at least raised on the flop with an overpair. So I think we're ahead. I think it's time to take this, to end this hand now and make a pretty big bet. So the pot was 215. If you had, you know, if you had been leading the betting the whole time, you'd probably bet about half the pot here. I would probably bet even more than that because there's two people in the hand. So I'm probably betting like 150 here, you know, which is what I would have raised to anyway in the last street. So 150 seems right. You know, I might even bet pot.
Yeah, so, yeah, 150 was a number I had in my head as well, too. I guess my concern with pot is that, well, I mean, I guess if you get somebody to call and they're making a mistake at that point with a pot-sized bet, probably. I don't know. 150 seems right to me, but.
Okay, well, I'm not looking for, you know, any criticism of what I said. I'm fine with either bet.
I'm just wondering if there's a case to be made that there might be a lesser hand. You know, if this other guy is drawing, you know, do we want him to draw? We just want him to pay too much to draw, right? So, but that's also discounting that we have a third player on the hand that might still call, even though he checked. Doesn't mean he gave up on this hand, right? So yeah, I don't know.
I feel like a person who's drawing, first of all, the guy raised preflop, and then he bets out. Didn't hit. Sounds like he has ace king. If he has ace king, he's drawn to a straight. If he has ace king of clubs, he's drawn to a flush. He probably saw there was extra people in the hand. Said, let me check for pot control, see if I can get to the river for their a cheaper price than, you know, value bet or something than what I need to put out there and then miss. So, yeah, I want them to call when they're drawing and miss. But there's two guys drawing. So one could be drawing to the straight, one could be drawing to the flush. So now I've got multiple draws that I need to protect against.
Reap to a higher card, you know, king comes.
Yeah,
in.
Exactly. So you got overs, because ace over. Helps us. But yeah, unless the ace now gives someone else Broadway, they could somehow have king jack. You never know. And so, really, I mean, I'm looking to end this hand. I'm not looking for these guys to make a mistake and draw and give me more money. I think it's a big enough pot now. Let's just move on without making a mistake. I'm going to bet pretty big here.
Yeah, and also if you are obviously we played this hand cautiously because we're a little scared to be in here. The fewer decisions you have to make in a game like this are the better, I would imagine. So
right.
So that's a case to try to end it now. So all right, my hero says it's time for me to bet for value and charge the draws. I cut out a bet of 120, slightly more than half pot. So I'm like, okay, so you know half pot is what you really should be betting here. I think we made a compelling point as to why you should throw a little bit more in, but
yeah.
You at least bet more than half pot, so that's good. He says, to my surprise, the button calls, and the action is on the under the gun plus one. He thinks about 30 seconds and then announces all in. Ask for a count, which comes to $563 total. Well, this appears to be a large overshow. The pot had $335 in it, and this made for an awkward SPR for him to raise anything other than a shove. I need to call another $443. The pot currently has $928 in it, so I'm getting a little bit, a little over 2-1 on the call with the button still behind me.
Well, this is tough because, you know, I like to always quote old school stuff when they say you don't ever want to go broke with just a pair, you know. Yep. You don't. But at the same time, I don't believe the under the gun plus one. I don't think a check raise makes sense here. Why wouldn't he just bet then? He's not saying that he's had such a strong hand he can give us free cards with multiple draws. He's going to want to protect that hand. He already bet out once. Why is he now check raising? I think it's desperate. That hand does not seem right. The other guy, I would think the same thing. I don't think we're losing. Why did he just call if he had his beat? Even if he had a set, he'd want to come alive now because it's just getting more and more scary out there. And still with multiple players in the pot with him. I think we're ahead of both of them, but it's a tough call to make just because of that edict where you don't want to go broke with just a pair. No matter how top doesn't mean anything. But I just don't think this under the gun razor plus one has a set or kings or aces. It doesn't feel like that. Why would he check and give everybody a free chance to hit the river? So I think we're ahead and I'm going to have to call. I don't like the call with just one pair, but the story that's been told by both of these players to me is that I'm ahead and I'm just going to have to dodge some bullets with the river to come.
Yeah. So I absolutely agree that this does not make any sense. The guy's story doesn't check out. So, and the other thing too, and unless I have the numbers incorrect too, our call here kind of closes out the action because the big button, we have the button covered.
Yeah.
Right. So that's another argument too. So now all the money's in, we get to see a river card. No one could bet us off of it on the river, you know, if it's something or whatever, you know, right? So,
right.
I feel like, I mean, maybe we're going to really regret losing this much money on this hand, but the spot that we're in right now, it seems to me that the under the gun plus one is trying to make a move on us, and the kid behind us might have a hand that can catch up, but we can't put any more money in the pot after this, so we will get to see it down to showdown. So I think I'm going to call here.
Yeah, that's weird. It's weird. Normally we would fold, or we're just, you know, a bunch of wimps, but in this case, it just, the stories don't add up, and it's a big game, and you're playing in a big game, and it's a big pot, and I'm not going to let it go because I'm scared. If I let it go, it's because it's some good rational thought. In this case, we use rational thought and felt like we're ahead, so I'm making the call.
All right, here it goes. Says I go deep into the tank. The only hands that are beating me are sets and two pairs. I block queen-queen, so that holding is unlikely. There's a slight possibility that queen-10 could be in his holding, as well as sets of tens and sixes. With such a draw-heavy board, I don't think any of those hands would check the turn with the intention of check-raising. There's no reason for a set or a made two-pair to pot-control the turn. It seems like there are way more flush and straight draws in his range than there are made hands. I would have felt better if I did not hold the queen of clubs, but eventually decide that there are too many draws in his range than value hands. Having come to that conclusion, I do not want to let the button stay in his hand with a random hand that could improve on the river. I announce all in for my remaining 14-10. All right, so did I get the button wrong then? I thought he said he was on $500.
He said, I do not want to let the button stay in his hand, you said? Let me see. I go back on my notes here.
Yeah, he said sits on 1,200, has been up and down all night, but it's currently up.
Yeah, he said the button has 1,200.
So maybe he's up. So maybe he's got. All right. So yeah. Okay. Well, that changes things then. If we would. Now his decision to go all in though is effectively the same thing. And that we're going to see ourselves a showdown.
Right,
so.
The button has more money. So I don't think we know what the end of the gun. My notes here don't say what the end of the gun stack is. The end of the gun plus one, I mean.
He was a little over 600, so that's...
Oh, okay, he was a little over 600. I don't have that written down here. Yeah. Okay, so, all right, so... Well, anyway, I mean, the guy goes all in for... So he had 600 when he started.
We assume the button's on the draw anyhow, so the all-in's the best way to go, because now you've priced him out of it, I think, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, you're probably going to get him to fold anyway. It's only one card to come, and that turn didn't complete anything for him. So, yeah, I think you want to isolate in case the guy does, like you said, hit some crappy random draw. So I like the shove.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what happens here. All right. The another gun plus one hangs his head when I announce all in, which is always good to see. The button quickly gets out of the way. The river is the deuce of hearts. I turn over my hand, and the other gun flips over to the ace of clubs, king of clubs, for a flop, nut flush, and gutter draw that missed. He announces a good hand and leaves for the night. I rake in a pot of squiggly 1950, securing a winning session for the night.
Oh, that's good.
Ooh, but yeah, okay, so let's go back. This is what we're talking about. So why ace-queen can be so dangerous is this is one of the reasons this guy had ace-king.
Yep.
We got lucky that we hit our queen, and it held up. But then, you know, I mean, look at all the cards that he had there.
Yeah.
Clubs, yeah. Broadway draws, a king, an ace would have helped. I mean,
king. Yeah. The king, a jack, and any clubs. He had the world. You know, he flopped the world. But we dodged it. I mean, I guess if any of those cards came, you know, we might have seen the other guy win the button too. Who knows? But yeah, this is crazy. It's like walking in between the raindrops. You know, that was that's a nice little victory there for you.
So I guess I'm curious now why he slowed down there. I mean, obviously he didn't have a made hand, but he had a lot of outs, a lot of hands, right? And he was leading this. But the fact that I'm not questioning slowing down. I'm questioning the check raise though.
Yeah, the check raise, I think, is desperation.
Check call situation would have made more sense there. But The check raise was interesting. But maybe he goes back. I think Ken said he probably felt like he was pot committed at that point. He probably didn't think it through. And when he was going to call, he realized he was just going to have to raise there. So maybe that's what happened. But, that was interesting. Well, and now I want to know what the button had, too. So.
And it's a classic Sklansky semi-bluff, too, where, you know, you're semi-bluffing. You're hoping to get to the river cheap, but you're thinking, hey, if this guy bets now, I'm just going to try to steal it, and it's just enough to make him fold, maybe. And if he only has one pair, and that's why he's betting to protect, I know he's betting to protect one hand, and most guys don't call all their chips off or a big pot like that for one pair. So he's thinking, I'm semi-bluffing. I'm bluffing with outs. I can hit, in his mind, he's thinking he can hit a king, he can hit a jack, or he can hit clubs with one card to come. And if you fold, you have another way of winning. So there's your other way. So that could be what he did. I think generally people, when they have a draw and they see bet because they had control of the hand preflop, a lot of them do slow down on the turn. I don't. I tend to keep betting because I want them to think I'm confident and I've hit like a set or top pair or something. But some people lose their nerve, and this guy just had a plan in mind. He thought, I'm going to check and get to the river for free, and if I don't, I'm going to change gears and really throw this guy off and try to get the button out, you know, because that's the other thing too, is the button was in the hand as well. And it just didn't work out for him. But that's a tough call to make, Ken, and I applaud you. That's not easy to do with just one pair, especially in a game that you're not really comfortable in that plays that big. It's a massive pot.
Yeah, going back to our opponent here, too, maybe it's just my Omaha bias, but there's nothing better in Omaha than winning a pot with nothing because you're betting your draws.
Yeah.
Because you know, if your draw comes in, you're not going to get paid off, right? So I don't know, for me, if I was that guy, I would have kept banging away here, and if I could get everybody to fold there, that's a win for me with, you know, ace high, and you know, if they call and I hit my hand, that's even better because now I just made even more money. So I just really don't see the check raise at all, and even I don't think a check call makes sense there, but whatever. So
but whatever.
It is nice to book a huge win in a game when you go up in levels. So, you know, despite his somewhat overly cautious play, that's a confidence builder, right?
I don't really remember 3-5 games either. I remember being 2-5, you know. I don't remember 3-5 games. I remember 1-2 and 1-3 and 2-5 and 5-10, but I don't remember a 3-5 game. That's an interesting breakup.
I've seen it in a couple places. I'm not really sure the science behind it. You know, a 1-3 obviously plays bigger than a 1-2.
Right.
Obviously, a 3-5 must play bigger than a 2-5, but I think that change is probably not as drastic. That $1 in the 3-5 game doesn't have as big of an effect as the $1 in the 1-3
game. Right, because the $1 is on the big blind rather than the small blind. The big blind ensures larger raises. If it's $5, still the big blind, and the other one, the 3, I don't see how that makes a difference. That's why it's weird to me. But,
yeah.
But all right, well, Ken, congratulations. Nice job, and glad you're on the show this week. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.